Taste of Country Nights with Evan Paul on demand. This episode, we're hanging out with Jade DeMarcus from Rascal Flatts.
I think we're not as petty as we used to be about things that we blew up into big problems that were not that significant. I think it's allowed us to take a step back and go, you know, everybody has their quirks.
We had a great conversation with Jade DeMarcus. He's always up front and telling us exactly what's on his mind. And today was no different. We got in there and he gave us the ins and outs, the goods, the bads, the ups and downs of Rascal Flatts as they embark on their 25th reunion tour, their Life is a Highway tour. Thank you for listening to this podcast that you're about to embark on. Look at me, I learned a new word. You could go back and listen to some of our past episodes. We've got everybody from Keith Urban, Dolly Parton, Kenny Chesney, you name it. Everybody in country music has been on our podcast. Just search for Taste of Country Nights on demand.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. What about yourself?
Man, I'm just in the middle of rehearsals trying to get this show ready to take on the road, buddy.
How's rehearsals going, man? Is it like riding a bike?
Yeah, it's fun. We've got a bunch of new band guys this time around, so it's their first time playing through the music, and it's been really exciting to kind of get in, and a lot of it's muscle memory. A lot of it's like, oh, yeah, I forgot I did that right there. So it's been really fun, man.
Have there been any mishaps, like any pyro mishaps on rehearsals or anything crazy?
Well, not yet. We're not into production rehearsals. So next week we go into production rehearsals, and I'll give you an updated take on it if somebody blows up.
Okay. That's good to know. Kind of like what came first, the chicken or the egg? What came first here, the song or the idea for the Jonas Brothers or the song?
The song came first from them. They kind of wrote this song with Shay Mooney from Dan and Shay, and they came to us and they were like, we feel like this is a chorus that sounds like Rascal Flatts and we'd love to be a part of it if it's something you guys are open to. And obviously we'd already decided to do this tour and we thought this might be a cool way to just kind of sneak back in at radio and release some new music. And you know, have long respected the Jonas Brothers and all they've been able to do. So it seemed to be a good opportunity and a good time and a good fit.
Did you guys get to like work with them like in studio or was it like emailed?
No, we mailed files back and forth. They kind of live all over the place. And so it was a little challenging to get all of us and all of our schedules to line up. So we went in and cut the track with Dan Huff, our longtime producer. It was fun to be back in the studio with him after all this time. So we did the track. Kind of had them do their vocals. They sent their vocals to us, and then we sang our parts on top of what they had already done. So it was good.
What's different with you guys this time around than the couple years ago?
You know, I think the major difference is we're a little bit older now. We're a little bit more wise, hopefully, in a lot of ways. And I think we appreciate what we had in many, many different ways this time. You know, after 20 years of being on the road nonstop and then not being able to finish on our own terms and COVID kind of killing the farewell tour and all that we had planned to do. Looking back now, I think it was kind of a blessing because there wasn't finality to it and it wasn't an end. It gave us a chance to come back years later and have a new beginning and really, really honor and appreciate how much we've been blessed. It's so hard to make it in the music business, and the things we've been able to do and the things we've been able to accomplish have been, you know, just wonderful blessings in our lives. And I think now we have a healthier attitude and greater appreciation for what we were able to do.
So like, I've never been in a band, but like, I've done like a morning show, and I know that like in radio, and if you have like a lot of people, eventually you have to have like a come to Jesus and a blow up. But the time after that is always like great because like everything's out there. Are you guys more honest with each other this time so nothing happens like last time per se?
I think that's probably a good way to put it. I think we're also not as maybe as petty as we used to be about things that we blew up into big problems that were not that significant. I think it's allowed us to take a step back and go, you know, everybody has their quirks. At the end of the day, I think wisdom, age, and some patience allow you to look at it from a different perspective and go, that really isn't that big of a deal. I can accept that about that guy, and hopefully they can accept this this about me, and you can all come to an understanding that without any one of the three of us, it wouldn't be Rascal Flatts. So we all bring something uniquely different to the table that I feel like are the ingredients that made us successful. So hopefully we're enough time has passed that we can all appreciate each other for our differences and for our quirks. You know, it is what it is. We all have different things that make us tick. So it's been really fun now to have been away from it, come back together and be around each other again and go, gosh, this really is something special.
In your recollection, like, is there you were talking about petty stuff. Is there anything that comes to mind, like you didn't load the dishwasher right type of a band situation? Like, I'll give you while you're thinking. A long time ago, I spoke with the Eli Young band, and they told me that one of their biggest arguments were always over, as starting a band, what cover songs to play. And they were like, they would have the biggest arguments and almost break up. And they look back now at it, and they're like, that was dumb. Like, do you have any, like, examples?
Oh, definitely. I mean, there are definite things that would, you know, get under my skin that now seem, you know, like, for instance, Jodan is always 15, 20, 30 minutes late to everything that we do. Used to drive me crazy to have to sit in a van and wait on him to go somewhere. You know, now it's kind of like, I don't know why in the world I would allow myself, first of all, to get so worked up over sitting around for a few extra minutes. I think it's because I always prided myself on being early to everything and not being late. And it's just, he wasn't doing it maliciously. It's his personality. It's just, it's like being married. Like, being in a band is being married. And you have to accept certain things about your partner or you're going to drive yourself crazy. You know, so things like that were little and would start out very little, and you just let mount up and mount up and build up to where you have a blow up about it. And then years later, you go, what in the world was I thinking? It wasn't that big of a deal.
What's it like? How is it being around sober Joe Don? Is it different?
Sober Joe Don is incredible. I have to say, I'm so proud of him for what he's been through and how he's been able to overcome. You know, I think he would tell you if he were sitting here that it's still a process every day, but I've seen him turn into a completely different person. It's an unbelievable metamorphosis. He is so zoned in now and so lucid and so intentional about everything that he does. And I'm so proud to see him in such a healthy space. It's really, really cool.
Darius Rucker told us that his wedding price is $1 million because he hates to play weddings, and someone paid it one time. Do y'all have a price like to fire up a wedding? Not just a corporate event, because obviously those are a whole deal, but specifically showing up to a wedding.
I think the price would be $3 million. A million for each of us. So,
and guy, have you guys done a wedding since you've been, like, you know, Rascal, not like in the van?
Damn. We had a fan write in one time, and we were so compelled by her story that we were playing close to where she was. So we took some cameras and we crashed her wedding, and we ended up singing Broken Road. And, you know, I was so grateful that we did it when we got there. It was something I was dreading, but we got there and we did the song, and I saw how much it meant to her family and to she and her groom, that it was so cool. And I'm so glad we did it, and we were able to capture it forever. So it was really great.
On that aspect, what's the wildest corporate event you've had to play? Like, have you had to play on top of a water slide or something, like at the grand opening of a Six Flags or something?
We played in front of a wave pool one time in the beginning, which was very, very loud when they would turn the waves on, and you could barely hear the PA over the waves and the kids screaming. And we're like playing at the other end of it. So that's the one time I remember that it was kind of like, what are we doing? I mean, surely this is going to change at some point.
Dude, could you imagine, like, looking back 25 years later, Rascal Flatts, somebody's out there going, like, I was in a wave pool one day and Rascal Flatts was playing.
And I think they were singing Praying for Daylight, but I'm not sure. I couldn't hear it.
What's your, do you guys have like a top three favorite song to play live? Like what's the, as a conglomerate, you guys get together and you're like, man, let's fire this one up. And you guys are like, oh yeah.
I think the favorites would be different for everybody, but probably more often than not, they would be, Broken Road, What Hurts the Most, and Life is a Highway, I say would be the top three.
Wow. Those are the ones I always hear too, man. I love them.
It's hard to miss with those three. You know, when you got those in your back pocket, they're crowd pleasers.
And dare I say that you have the best head of lettuce in country music, man.
Oh, God, man.
Yeah,
Thank
I
you.
mean, dude, you, I mean, to the fact that that's a full lawn and there's not just
Yeah.
weeds and stuff, God bless you,
I
man.
appreciate it, man. It gets older. As you get older, it gets harder and harder to keep it. So
Dude, you don't want to see under here. Yeah, I know.
I get it, brother.
Thanks, man. And congratulations on
Thank
everything
you.
going so well for you guys. I'm so excited.
Appreciate that, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you guys are my favorite, man. I got a
I
whole
appreciate it,
Amazon
brother.
playlist. You're the man.
Come out and see us somewhere.
All right, I'll be hitting up Eric.
All right, buddy.
All right,
Sounds
thanks,
good.
man. See
Take
ya.
care. Bye.
And I want to bring in Billy Dukes from behind the camera, who gave me a good heads up on this, that Jay Marcus, I'm sorry, that Jay DeMarcus is very informative. You gave me the heads up that he is gonna be get down to business and answer a lot of questions, and he sure did.
Of the members of Rascal Flatts, he's the one you want to interview solo because I think he's kind of like the leader of the band. No one's ever said it, but I've always got that sense around him that he kind of is the guy who is sort of maybe the most responsible in the group.
Yeah.
And he's not shy about answering questions. And in a solo setting like this, I mean, we've talked about this a bunch on this podcast, but like you get a group, like sometimes they're afraid to answer questions. Like, I'm not sure he tells that story about how he used to hate Joe Don Rooney being late if Joe Don Rooney's sitting right next to him.
Man, that's a great point. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, totally. You get a lot more when it's when you just isolate them. And not only that, like I mean, recently we had Rascal Flatts as a group on here, and you know, you can hear if you go back and listen to that where they all play their part, you know, and like you said, Jay kind of leads it, and then Gary was kind of the goofy one that kind of tosses in a joke here and there, and the dynamic has changed a little bit. I never really interviewed him when Joe Don was, you know, hammered or whatnot, so I don't know what that's like, but. A sober Joe Don, you know, he just kind of adds on to what Jay says.
I didn't, you know, that was the funny thing about Joe Don Rooney. Like, it was a surprise to me that he had all those drug and alcohol problems and rehab because I had been around them a lot and seen him perform quite a bit back when we had festivals. They did a lot of our festivals and they always did the pre-concert interview and very responsible. He was very engaging. I never got any sense that there was one time where I was interviewing him and Joe Don was like watching the Masters on his phone. Which was, you know, that was kind of a jerk, but that wasn't like he was falling asleep watching it. He was just, he loves golf and he wanted to watch the Masters that year for whatever reasons. So
Yeah,
kind of rude,
I
but
mean,
still responsible, you know?
it's kind of gives me similar vibes to like Charles Kelly and Lady A, you know, like sure we knew he liked to drink, but you know, I guess no one he was very functioning.
Yeah, I would say that's a really, really accurate comparison. So this song, I thought maybe it was just going to be like, oh, Rascal Flatts, we got a song just to kind of give our tour a little bit of a boost. But radio is really picking it up. Like a lot of radio stations added this song right out of the gate. It seems like it's going to have some pretty long legs.
Dude, and the thing that I have a question about though is that when Jay was telling me that the Jonas Brothers, you know, wrote it with Shay, and they were like, "This sounds like a Rascal Flatts hook." How that became a Rascal Flatts song and not Jonas Brothers featuring Rascal Flatts? Do you think they took it over because, you know, it was like, "Hey, we're embarking on this tour, and this is what we need."
Or why didn't it become a Dan and Shay song? Because there's not that much of a difference between a Dan and Shay hook and a Rascal Flatts hook.
That's true.
It
Good
might have been just
point.
timing. Maybe the Jonas Brothers aren't really in a new music space. and they knew Rascal Flatts could do something with it pretty quickly and kind of give both of their careers a boost. Or maybe this is like a little bit of a different direction than the Joe Bros are going in. So they're kind of using it to kind of keep themselves relevant while they kind of get to that next chapter. That's a good question, though. You know, does Rascal Flatts joining a Jonas Brothers song, though, does that have as much power on pop radio?
No, I don't think so. No.
Yeah, I don't either. Because it seems like maybe you got this old country veterans on a contemporary pop song.
I don't think pop radio would touch. I mean, at this point, I feel like the Jonas Brothers are semi-old on pop radio. I mean, just putting it out there, you know, so I feel like if you put both of them together, it's a weird move. Like, I mean, it's, if you would have said, I mean, it's a great song. I like it. If you would have said like, hey, the Rascal Flatts are going to do a song with the Jonas Brothers. I mean, it just is a weird move, but I think that's part of the allure to it is that everyone just wants to hear it, you know, and like, what does it sound like?
I immediately thought of the Dan and Shay Justin Bieber song.
Yeah.
10,000 Hours, which I thought that would be much. It was big. I shouldn't say it wasn't big. It won a Grammy, but I thought it would really be like a nationwide talked about event. And I think part of the reason it wasn't is because COVID hit. So that might've scuttled some plans to kind of promote that song. But it very much reminds me of that pairing.
It's a weird dynamic. I think if you go to a Rascal Flatts concert and you're in your 20s or 30s, you're excited to, if Jonas Brothers come out, you're excited to see Jonas Brothers, whereas your parents are pumped that Rascal Flatts are coming out and they remember you listening to Jonas Brothers as a kid.
But the Jonas Brothers they're not quite so nostalgic that they've embraced being. Like, remember when Florida Georgia Line did the song with Backstreet Boys? Like, Backstreet Boys. You don't remember that song? They did God, Your Mama, and Me.
Oh, I think so.
It was like 2017 or something like that. And like, I remember the ACM Awards, Radio Row, Florida Georgia Line was there, and Backstreet Boys were there. Like, they did a lot of interviews together. And they really embraced, the Backstreet Boys did, being sort of that little blast in the nostalgia. Do the Jonas Brothers, have they embraced that in the kind of the same way?
I don't know. How do you think, who is the, what's the oldest Jonas brother? I got it pulled up.
What do we got? Nick, Joe, and who's the third one?
Or Priyanka.
Four? How many are there?
Priyanka Chopra?
Bianca?
Oh, Priyanka Chopra. That's his wife. Sorry. Kevin, Joe, and Nick.
Kevin, Joe, and Nick. I'm going to say, I think Joe Jonas is the oldest, isn't he?
He is not. Oh. Kevin is the oldest. How old do you think he is when he woke up today?
36.
Boom. No. He nailed it.
Is that right?
36. Yeah, don't take it back. Yeah. You nailed it.
All right. So if he's 36, they're in their young 30s. Like, they probably see themselves as still like competing with like those artists we saw on the Grammys.
No way. I mean, if they do, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't see it.
I think they're thinking like, we got one more good run left in us on pop radio.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Jordan trying to come back as number 45. Like, go try.
But I guess my point is they haven't embraced like being sort of that nostalgic 2010s pop band. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah.
They're not Backstreet Boys in 2017 where they're just like, or like NSYNC in that Tide commercial. Yeah. They're not running that circuit.
Well, and the other thing I thought was not weird, but it was interesting to hear that when you're Rascal Flatts, you can't just dial up. You can't get all the Jonas Brothers in a studio at one time. Like, what are they doing? He said they had to like email it back and forth and stuff. That's something where I was like, what do you mean?
That doesn't surprise me, only because I think that's kind of the common way of doing it. Like, I don't know when you have these collaborations, how common it is to get the person in the room.
Okay.
I think usually in most cases, I think Cody Johnson and Carrie Underwood were an exception. But I think usually it's like you add your vocals and then maybe you send it back and people make make changes sort of as necessary.
Yeah, I want to see though, like, I like that Kerry and Cody, because I like when they do the video, you know, and so you see like the footage of them making the song. I think that's cool. I like that.
I've spent a lot of time in my life thinking about Rascal Flatts and sort of their legacy and like what they are and how they'll be remembered. And this new chapter really sort of changes like that conversation in my head, because like, I feel like they're calling this a reunion tour, or they're not calling it a farewell tour anymore, are they?
No, just the Life is a Highway tour.
Yeah, I think, like, I feel like they're back. Like, we're going to get, like, a single and then an album, and then, like, this isn't like Brooks and Dunn just kind of out there doing a few shows. Maybe they'll get to some music. I feel like Rascal Flatts is, like, maybe they think they got another run in them. Like, we can, hey, boys, let's give it a go and see what we can do. Maybe we can get a CMA nomination and another couple few number one hits and whatnot.
Dude, that would be so cool if they just won CMA Group of the Year, like random. Yeah, I'm totally down. I wonder if their fans want it, you know? And it's worrisome, I would think, if you had such a big career like Rascal Flatts, and I don't know, I'd want to go out on top. And I always get scared when these artists try to come back. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, man, I don't know. Should you have left the way it is, or is it gonna? Are they gonna come back tenfold, and they're gonna be in Pixar movies again? You know, or is it gonna be crazy?
I legitimately wonder, and I hope I don't say this with any sound of skepticism. I want to know how their tour is selling.
Yeah, yeah, I would be interested to know too. Yeah, and how much they are, you know, and if that's something that people want to go see.
Right, because they're competing with some pretty tough tour dates out there. There's some pretty banger tours right now. And sort of, I think the populace has sort of moved on a little bit, or at least so they kind of are relying on sort of that nostalgic audience in the same sort of way that like Alan Jackson does. But Alan Jackson also gets a lot of new fans. Yeah, I'd be curious to know how it's, they could be selling out or they could be struggling. I really have no clue.
I think it's going to be the number one concert tour to get proposed at this year. I think there's going to be a lot of proposals. There's going to be like a baby boom. There's going to be a Flats boom. I think a lot of people are going to be, bless this broken road. You know, they're going to get in there and they're going to propose.
I'll say this, though. If Rascal Flatts does sort of make this some comeback and kind of embrace being a little bit of like the older guys in country, where like the younger fans can be like, oh yeah, I loved those guys, I remember them growing. Like if that kind of spin happens in the way, like, and that's happened before. I mean, Alan Jackson is an example. I think that will totally change their legacy. All of a sudden, everybody will embrace Rascal Flatts, and that'll kind of grease the rails for them to get into the Hall of Fame, which is where I think they deserve to be. But I think right now it'll take a while. Some success here will speed that up in my mind.
Wow, they're dependent on this time around? They're not Hall of Fame worthy right now before this?
I think they're going to get in, and I think they're worthy. But I think this will speed up and make that conversation a little easier to have, because the pop acts always struggle a little bit. Kenny Rogers took forever to get in the Hall of Fame, and there's other examples. Like, if you're not a traditional country guy, people are always like, that's not real country until you are.
Well, does one of them have to die?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I'm going to say no.
That's what Toby told us. Toby said you don't get into the Hall of Fame until you're dead.
No, I don't think one of them has to die, because I don't think any one of them is so much the face of the band that there would be sort of that level of... And in fairness, Toby was technically in the Hall of Fame before he was, they had decided to make him a Hall of Famer before he died.
Okay. I mean,
days before. It was close. But
I'm glad he got to see that through.
Because he didn't get to see it through. That was the thing. It was like they decided it, then he had died, and then they announced it. So he didn't know.
He didn't know? Surely he knew.
No, I don't think he knew.
That's messed up, man. That's a whole other episode we could get into, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that was 1 year ago, almost exactly this week. He died on February 5th, 2024. So
that's today.
Yeah, literally. If the day we're dropping this podcast is his 1 year anniversary.
Yeah, you can if you want to go back and listen to that full interview. Just scroll on back down here through Taste of Country Nights on Demand. We got to sit down with Toby Keith months before he passed away. And thanks so much for listening to this episode here of Taste of Country Nights on Demand.